The recordings have started.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. This is CWG INA meeting number 90 on September 1st, 2016 at 2000 UTC. I will now hand it over to Jonathan.
Thanks, Yuko, and hi, everyone. Welcome to our call. Not so easy to see how challenging or long the call will be. We've got a few things to deal with, and so we'll see how we get on with those. I guess reminding you, as I have done previously, when chairing the call is clearly we've got staff running the implementation, and we're getting down to some of the very final points now, and our job is to clearly ensure that the implementation is consistent with our proposal and to assist with any issues between external legal counsel and ICANN to try and when and if there are thorny or nuggets that need to be dealt with. We've given Sidley direction to work directly with ICANN, and that's particularly pertinent to tonight, or at least tonight for me, today's call, in the sense that as we deal with the naming function agreement, a table has just been published which essentially, and we'll come to that in section three of the agenda, which essentially lays out where ICANN and Sidley have got to. And in many cases, there is agreement between ICANN and Sidley, and it's up to the CWG to accept or not that status quo. And then there's clearly a few issues in there that need some more detailed discussion, one of which at least has been getting quite some discussion on the list very recently, and in fact, things have been quite active on the list, as you will have seen. So key objectives for today is really to try and make some good progress and ideally resolve the outstanding issues with the naming function agreement. The services agreement, we'll touch on that when we deal with where we are in the implementation, but we're not quite ready to deal with that in this call. And then the other substantial point is the issues in and around the IANA IPR and the signatory to the community agreement and the issues that arise from that definition of naming community and nomination of CCG reps. So those are really the two key areas of focus, dealing with the naming function agreement and the points in and around the IPR. Just to remind you, naming function agreement is out for public comment in its original or in its form as published, and that public comment period closes just over a week from now on the 9th of September. I looked today, and when I looked, there were no comments published, and one of the key issues that we'll need to decide is whether the CWG is going to submit a form of comment letter or alternatively, a red line update of how we see the document, which may be the most elegant way of doing it, is to simply say, having deliberated on the document that was sent out for public comment, we submit a revised version in red line format. We can talk about that process as well, which is, I think, important to agree on and understand. So I think that's where we are at the moment, and we've got a couple of substantial points, as I said, and hopefully we can make good progress on those. Before we move on to those, does anyone have any points on that sort of preamble, the structure of the call, any points of clarification or understanding of the agenda? Any initial points that anyone would like to ask questions on or raise at this stage? Okay, good. Well, we've got reasonable attendance, and we've had active participation on the list, which is good to see. And we've got representatives of course, ICANN staff, ICANN legal staff as well. And we've certainly got representatives of Sidley on the call. So welcome, everyone. And let's get moving on then with the implementation update from staff, which I don't expect to be particularly long, but it should set out where we are. Let me hand over to you, Trang, for this section two of the agenda.
Thank you, Jonathan. So projected in the Adobe Connect room is a slide that we had used last time, and we are planning on using this slide to provide you with the implementation update from here on out as it summarizes the remaining work that needs to be done in a good format. As Jonathan mentioned, the PTI naming function agreement is currently out for public comment, which will end on September 9th. And as you can see there, those are the dates that we communicated last time, and they have not changed. Before September 15th, we will need to publish the staff analysis and the final agreement. And the ICANN board is scheduled to meet on September 15th, and the agreement is on the board agenda for consideration and approval on the 15th. And then prior to September 30th, the PTI board would also need to approve the agreement. Of course, before September 30th, both ICANN and PTI will need to sign the agreement. The text that I've highlighted in blue is an update for you as to where we are with the agreement. Yesterday, Sidley had sent to the client committee a red line against the version that was published for public comment, as well as a table that summarizes the issues that we like, the remaining issues that we'd like to discuss with the CWG. So that was circulated yesterday, which has been forwarded on to the CWG. I think maybe a little over an hour ago, I circulated an updated table adding to it the item around Section 4.7 of the agreement, which has a specific reference to Section 1.3 of the 2005 GAC principle. As Jonathan mentioned, there's quite an active discussion around that topic on the CWG list. So we've added it to the table to provide an opportunity for further discussion. With regards to the PTI services agreement, the timeline is there on the slide, so I won't read it to you. And it has not changed from the timeline that was provided on the last call. With regards to that agreement, Sidley and ICANN have been in conversations and discussions. I think we're down to just a very few, I want to say maybe a handful or a little over a handful of items left for consideration. The ball is in ICANN's court on that services agreement, and we are hoping to get back to Sidley today with responses to their last round of edits. We anticipate that we should be able to work through most of, if not all of those items with Sidley, but any remaining items that we have, we will be sure to bring it back up to the CWG for discussion. The last item, remaining item of work is the IANA IPR agreements. Since the last call, there had been an IANA IPR call where the group had agreed on a timeline to finalize the agreement. As mentioned on the last call, the agreements are currently out for public comment, which will close on September 12th. By September 19th, I believe that the community is anticipating that the analysis and discussions would conclude, and then by September 21st, the agreement is finalized. On the 22nd of September, I believe there's an IETF trust meeting, and so that's when approval of the agreements are anticipated to occur by the IETF trust, and when the final approval from the communities are also expected. The anticipated timeline is that by September 26th, the ICANN board would approve the agreements, and of course the agreements would be signed by September 30th. So Lisa, if I got any of those dates wrong, please correct me. And that is it in terms of an implementation status update, Jonathan. I'll turn back to you and we'll be happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Trang. That seems succinct and clear. Suppose just one other comment, and that you or someone working for or with you helpfully prepared that status report in response to a question list by Cavusa, I believe. And so if anyone wants to sort of refer back to that, I think that's quite a helpful summary point as to where we are also in terms of capturing where we are in the process. Any other questions or comments in relation to this slide or the input from staff or the mechanics of where we are currently. Like I said a moment ago, a key issue for me will be how we deal with our comment or input on the naming functions agreement, and I won't preempt the outcome of going through the table, but certainly once we've gone through that table, it seems to me we're going to end up with a sort of agreed variation to that document that's out for public comment. And my feeling, which I'll seed with you, is that probably the most efficient way to provide that comment is to say the CWG, having reviewed the document out for public comment and in consultation with our own legal advisors and ICANN legal, proposes the following variation to it and offer that up as public comment. It feels to me like that's the most efficient way of doing it rather than going through a substantial letter detailing all of that as we have done in other areas. But let's see where we get to with the table. Right. So we can move now on to the key issues. And as I said at the outset, we're really going to be dealing with the two primary bullets, being the naming function agreement and the IANA IPR. So let's pull up the table now. And this was prepared for us by Sidley. You have hopefully seen this on list and deals with a number of different points. And I suggest to you that the best way to deal with this is to simply walk through these point by point. It's not that many of them. I didn't count them, but it feels to me like 10 or 12, something like that. I suggest we simply walk through these, check them, and make sure we are either satisfied or have appropriate discussion on them, and deal with it like that. So they're numbered in the far left-hand column, A1, A2, A3, etc. And A1 comes from section 4.2 in the document, and this deals with. Wondering, Josh, if this is something you would feel comfortable, it may be better that since this is a Sidley prepared document, it might be helpful if you were to walk through it, and then we can just take questions or input, because would that be okay with you? Do you feel in a position to do so? If not, I'd be happy to do it, but it may be more appropriate and better coming from you.
No, Jonathan, it's Josh. That's fine. I think it's something that I can start the conversation on. I think there are some specific issues that I'm going to defer to ICANN staff, ICANN Legal, Samantha and Tran, to talk about the ICANN position, because on some of these points, they were not, some of these open items or items requesting confirmation, I should say, are not ones that have, you know, specific legal significance or legal tie-in to the CWG proposal that Sidley was helping to vet, but are more dealing with technical issues relating to the IANA services themselves. And I think they can be closed out by discussion led by Sam and Tran for their, you know, reasoning behind the position they've put forward. If people have a copy of the red line available, it might be helpful to look at that side by side as we go through this.
Yes.
The first item.
Josh, just for the record, then you sent out, or it was sent out to the group, both the red line document in PDF format with the full red line and in this table. So they can be cross-referenced with one another, as you suggest, and I'm perfectly willing to facilitate any discussion should that be necessary if we get to any points. I mean, my personal pass-through on it didn't seem to offer significant impediments apart from some that we've already got discussion on, but let's see how we go. So let me hand back to you, Josh. Go ahead.
Okay, great. So the first issue is A1, which deals with the U.S. presence, and it's whether or not the language is sufficient to enable, which specifies that primary responsibilities or primary operations are going to be in the U.S., but that doesn't preclude, you know, ICANN's belief, and we don't have any reason to object or disagree with that, that does not preclude the possibility of using remote employees or providing support, which could come from other jurisdictions. And so the initial question is, you know, to CWG, is this something that we can consider closed out, or do people, you know, and there's a consensus that no further changes are required, or does there need to be some discussion of this topic further?
Josh, it's Jonathan. I would suggest that you sort of call the question, and assuming there are no responses or objections, we can consider that closed. So the issue is, does anyone have any objection to this resolution as presented, or are there any points of discussion? And if not, we consider that particular item closed. Thanks.
There don't seem to be any objections to this item A1, so we will consider that one closed. The next one is also something that there had been some questions raised initially by through the Paul Kane comment document by Paul or Becky or others. ICANN has responded with some changes that it believes address those issues and provided some comment and further explanation. And there hasn't been any further discussion that we're aware of, and they're asking if the language as presented with the changes, the limited changes here in 4.4D that you can see, are sufficient to address CWG concerns, or are there any objections to the language, you know, as presented now in the red line? Okay. The next one, I think, is...
No, we've got a hand up from Becky.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Becky.
Sorry, I'm just trying to figure out where on this list the what item A, what this is.
Are you looking at the table, Becky, that's on
yeah.
the shared screen?
Yeah.
So A2, which is section 4.4D of the agreement.
I think that this was okay.
Okay. So if there's no objection by anyone else, we'll consider this one closed as well. So Tran or Samantha, is this A3 now that has been sort of, is this the issue that's been, I think, getting the most recent traction, and you all dropped this in? So why don't I turn it over to you all to discuss this issue? Either Samantha, Eisner, or Tran.
Josh, I can help here, and others may want to come in. But, I mean, this clearly has been the subject of some discussion, and it's recently included in, well, it's very recently included in the table. It wasn't included in the original draft of the table. And I think the key issue is the structure of the paragraph, and there has been some discussion about how this could be perhaps reworded, and it's the potential inclusion or not of this reference to section 1.3. Would anyone from staff like to comment at this point, as invited by Josh, or would, and other than that, yes, and to Becky's point in the chat, there is some alternative language. Becky, maybe it would be useful, I know it's on list, but to simply post that alternative language into the chat on the room, because, and then perhaps you could speak to the change that's been made and proposed there so others can understand what's been suggested. I'm not sure everyone's had the opportunity to keep up to date with the latest discussion on list.
Jonathan, this is Sam. While Becky's posting that,
go ahead, Sam.
First of all, you know, so clearly this has been an item of a lot of communication and discussion on the list, and I think it's important to note that this is something that we think it's really important for a proper reflection in the agreement. But ICANN doesn't really have a position one way or the other on the reference of 1.3 or how the where applicable comes in. You know, we think that if there's ever any question about what the PTI is supposed to apply, they should come back to ICANN and say, okay, we're not clear how to follow our obligation, tell us what to do. So with that, you know, we've seen the language that Becky has presented, and, you know, if it's something that the group agrees clears up some of the confusion, and some of the concerns that have come in because of the language, we would be supportive of moving that in. We think that this, the most important thing is to make sure that the document reflects what the community senses is important in it. So we don't want it to be too limiting from one aspect or too open-ended from the other. And then, you know, we think that if the movement is towards removing the specific reference to Section 1.3, we think we could assist in modifying the other place that it's included. It's in two places. So we would be supportive of whatever way the community moves forward on this.
Thanks, Sam. So Becky's posted the proposed revised language of Section 4.7 and notes also further that, the subsequent discussion on the email list has suggested substitution of substitute consult where apply was previously used. Becky, I think it might be useful if you just describe very briefly how that paragraph is structurally changed, and then let's see what level of support or concern there is with the revised proposed wording.
Okay, thanks very much. So when the CCNSO and CC members on the CWG were going through this, what we were concerned about is the reference to the Section 4.7 directs the contractor to apply policies for root zone management, and then went on to identify policies developed by the GNSO and the CCNSO and adopted by ICANN, which are clearly policies. RFC 1591, which has always been a an ICANN policy, as interpreted by the framework of interpretation, which went through a very long policy discussion interpretation process, and it is not new policy. It's a guide to, you know, it goes hand in hand with 1591, and that was adopted by the ICANN board. But then, third in the list, it contained the GAC principles, the GAC 2005 principles on CCTLD delegation and redelegation. And while the GAC principles are clearly, the GAC sees those as advice and important advice, it's not an ICANN policy. It hasn't gone through any of the ICANN policy development processes or, you know, been part of something that was adopted by the board as part of a policy development process. In addition, by its terms, it applies in very very specific circumstances. And we were concerned that including it in a list of policies undermined the concept of policy development at ICANN in a way that we were very concerned about, and also, you know, just sort of didn't created potential confusion, and also suggested potential application beyond where it clearly applies by its terms. So we had proposed some language to refer specifically to the section in the GAC principles that talks about where it applies, and the GAC participants objected to that. And so what I've attempted to do here is to say, the contractor is going to apply policies developed by the GNSO and the CCNSO, and RFC 1591 is interpreted by the framework of interpretation. And then in addition to these policies, the contractor would apply or refer to the GAC principles where they apply. So we've gotten rid of the reference to Section 1.3, which I believe was the source of objection by the GAC participants, and we've clarified that while the GAC advice, the GAC principles are not ICANN policy, they are to be applied or complied with where they apply.
Thanks, Becky. And I guess from a device point of view, it seems to me what you've also done quite elegantly is you've removed this final section from under the umbrella of policy while still retaining it under the umbrella of responsibility and respect for stakeholders, which is the sort of overarching objective of the paragraph. But so you've separated out from under the policy umbrella but retained it under that. And that, to me, seems to be an effective way of responding to some of the comments on the email list, which were respectful of the concern that this may not be policy, but wanted to retain this umbrella of responsibility and respect for stakeholders. So it seems to be an elegant proposal to deal with the concerns. Are there any questions, comments, or responses to this proposed revised wording? And just for the record, the Josh just supported the change, in fact, on changing apply to consult. And the proposed revised wording should include the change of the use of the word apply to consult. Chuck, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Chuck Gomes speaking. Just a clarification, as some of you may have seen, although it happened just shortly before this call. I responded to Jorge, who looks like he's not on the call, saying why I thought the inclusion of Section 1.3 was helpful, because it was very specific. And I think the more specific we can be, avoiding vagueness, is very important for PTI, so that their directions are clear and it minimizes their need to go back and get further direction. That said, my question is, now that the reference to 1.3 is not going to be in there, and by the way, I support the alternative language with using the word consult instead of apply, as Becky discussed, but I guess my question is it specific enough now so that there's no ambiguity in terms of what instructions PTI would follow? And I don't know, Becky, I guess, first of all, that may be to you, so I'm glad to see your hand up, but I'm certainly open to listening to everyone that has a comment on this. Thanks.
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks for the question. Over to you, Becky.
So although I think many of us would have preferred to include the reference to Section 1.3, which is very clear, I think there were two concerns that were being dealt with. One was the sort of description of GAC advice as policy, where policy has particular meaning, and I think that's a universally important concern. And so, although I think it would be clearer, I think it is adequately clear in this formulation, where applicable, and 1.3 is very clear, and I would think that PTI would be able to read 1.3 and understand exactly where it would apply. Frankly, the where applicable and the limitation 1.3 seemed much more important if it was going to be in a list of policies, because it would be hard for PTI to understand, sort of how you deal with one policy and another. Here, I think, describing it as something other than policy principles, and then and particularly with the consult language, I think we can live with it. And I think from a legal standpoint, it's adequately clear, Chuck.
Thanks, Becky. Any other comments or questions? I note that Lisa has put her comment in the chat that it seems like a good compromise text, and Chris agrees with Becky, I assume, most recent point that it's sufficiently or adequately clear as it stands. So I think pending no other comments or objections, this is the proposed revised language and the language that we will substitute for what was there previously in our current red line, and it seems to be provide some form of compromise. All right. Seeing no other hands up in the discussion, I think I'll hand back to you, Josh, for the and Becky notes for ICANN staff that we do need to conform other sections of the agreement where the same issue might arise. So this effectively becomes a master for those other areas. All right, let's move on then, Josh. I'll hand back to you to deal with A4 onwards, and let's see what progress we can make there.
Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan. And Tran did note that she will update, or she'll make the conforming change in the other areas, and Cecilia will help watch for that as well. So the next item is A4, which is the inspection of deliverables and reports before publication, and it refers to Section 4.10A of the agreement. A question was raised about whether or not it was appropriate or practical to have a blanket prohibition on publication of reports and other deliverables by PTI. And I don't think that was the intent ICANN had in this language, but they've revised it to make it clear that they will develop with PTI a template that can be used for posting of reports and deliverables, and so long as the information posted is on and consistent with the form of the template, this section would not restrict or require inspection prior to publication. But if there is a change, then there would be a need to work with contractor to work with ICANN to get their approval and remedy the template or remedy the report and make any changes necessary. So the question here again is if this change is adequate to address the concerns of members of CWG. And so let me ask if there's no objection to this language as presented with the change in 4.10 that is noted in the chart and in the document itself, and we can consider this closed. I'll pause for a moment and see if anybody raises their hands. And nothing in the chat, so we'll consider it closed. The next item is in A5, which deals with performance exclusions in Section 5.3A. There was some question here raised about PTI's involvement with the root zone or performing tasks or services related to the root zone, and ICANN has revised the language here to make it very clear that contractor is not going to be performing those services that are performed by the root zone maintainer, which are contemplated by our ZMA, unless specifically authorized by ICANN to do so. So I think, again, this is a question, with this change, does CWG have any further objection to the language presented as a means of resolving this? We'll pause for any questions or comments in the chat. There being none, we'll consider this one closed as well. The next one is item A6, which addresses 6.1C in the agreement. There was some comment here about the ability of people to access reports, minutes, discussions relating to the IANA naming function that happened at the board. And ICANN had language in here that allowed it to redact those minutes in certain situations. And there was some concern raised about whether or not that created sort of an exception that a truck could be driven through, speaking proverbially, you know, and whether the exception would swallow the rule. ICANN responded with some language that, you know, PTI would operate in an open and transparent manner, and it would do so in a manner that's consistent with the concepts that are contemplated in ICANN's bylaws. So, again, this is one that, you know, we're asking, or ICANN's asking, Sidley had no further comment on this, and are asking for confirmation from CWG whether there's any objections or can this matter be considered closed as well. Okay. So I think with no objection, no hands raised, and no comments in the chat, we'll consider this one closed too. The next one is item A7, and it refers to section 8.1 of the agreement. And this relates to the complaint resolution process.
Yeah, Josh, if I could maybe jump in on this one.
Yep.
Because this is, I think, one of the topics that ICANN wanted to raise to the CWG for discussion.
Correct. Thank you, Trent.
Thanks, Josh. Section 8.1 of the agreement describes the customer service complaint process. And as background information for those that are not familiar with the customer service complaint process that is described in the CWG proposal, let me just take a minute to sort of describe the process and then phrase the question. So the CWG proposal provides for two phases to the customer service complaint process. In phase one, anyone can submit a customer service complaint to PTI. And PTI staff will attempt to resolve it. And if the complaint is not resolved satisfactorily, then the complainant can escalate in writing to PTI's management team, at which time the CSC will be notified. And the complaint can also be escalated to the ICANN ombudsman. So that's phase one of the customer service complaint process that's in the CWG proposal. Now, the CWG proposal says, and I quote, if the issue is not addressed in phase one and the complainant, which is the direct customer of PTI, the IFO, or the ICANN ombudsman can request mediation. So it is this sentence in phase two of the process that we are not clear about. It is not clear to us, why the ombudsman, which is a place for neutral dispute resolutions over issues of fairness, would be able to initiate mediation or what the ombudsman's ongoing role in that mediation is expected to be. So we had reached out to Chuck, who was the design team lead for Design Team M, to inquire about this. And Chuck, I don't want to speak for you, so I don't know if you want to chime in and provide your thoughts on what this statement in phase two was meant. So I see Chuck, your hand is up, so please come in.
Thanks. This is Chuck. What I'm going to share is going to be are going to be thoughts of my own, not Design Team M. I did reach out to Design Team M a couple days ago. Not surprisingly, I didn't get any responses because we haven't been functioning for a long time. And certainly, if there are any former Design Team M participants on this call, please feel free to speak up. But in my recollection, which isn't terribly clear. I did go back, though, and look at Design Team M exchanges on our list and so forth. I really don't think that Design Team M had any intention of asking the ombudsman to do things that really weren't a good fit for the ombudsman. What I think happened is we didn't really focus on that particular issue of what was appropriate for the ombudsman. I don't even recall us discussing that. I think what happened was because the ombudsman was listed as an option, and by the way, in the CWG proposal, the role of the ombudsman is an option, was proposed as an option, not a requirement. And so I think this was just something we didn't zero in on sufficiently. So I think, in my own opinion, I think that adjusting this to fit more appropriately to the agreed role of the ombudsman, in other words, I don't think that it needs to stay the way it is, allowing the ombudsman to request mediation. The ombudsman is referred to in the phase two recommendations. So I don't know if we have to deal with that at all. I don't have strong feelings there. But my own personal opinion is that I think it would be appropriate to fix this so that we don't give the ombudsman the opportunity to request mediation. And, of course, also thinking about the third party that would be working with the ombudsman, they wouldn't have any standing to do that. So as staff rightly noted, there's some disconnects here with regard to the way it reads right now in phase two of the escalation process. So I'm personally comfortable with fixing it to avoid the problems that staff identified.
Thank you, Chuck. And we've been thinking through as well what a potential fix for it may be, and perhaps something along the lines of the fact that if a complaint is escalated to the ombudsman through the established processes here, and the ombudsman determines that the issue is still unaddressed by PTI adequately, or that there is no ability to achieve resolution of the complaint through the ombudsman's office, then the ombudsman may take a next step, which is to recommend that the parties proceed to mediation. And if the complainant then wished to take up an ombudsman recommendation for mediation, obviously the CWG proposal does provide for that. So maybe the fix is something along those lines, and we can work on some draft language that we can share with the CWG for consideration.
Thanks, Trang. Josh, you going to come back in?
Yeah, I actually don't know that statement would be necessary, and I agree it does. It still, to my mind, confuses the role of the ombudsman, which is supposed to be, to provide good office in a way and to be a neutral, a neutral party. And I don't think it should be in a position to evaluate whether or not there has been adequate resolution. I mean, I think if the complainant doesn't believe there's adequate resolution, then the complainant can pursue it further. And that language is provided for in 8.1b. And otherwise, I don't think it's really up to the ombudsman, or should necessarily even be the ombudsman's role to make a factual assessment and recommend one way or the other. So I'd argue that, or I propose the language, given what Chuck has said about DTM's sort of thinking here and what we all know an ombudsman's role to be as a general matter, I think the language that's proposed in 8.1A and B now sure does sufficiently capture things.
Thanks, Josh. Well, I think what we were asking for is for clearly you and ICANN Legal to resolve this as best as possible and to come back to us. And the only comment we've had from the group is from Chuck, recognizing that there is a potential issue and seemingly satisfied with that. So unless others have an objection, I think we should let you conform to the language that you've agreed with ICANN Legal so far. And I see a check mark from Chuck in the chat, so that's helpful. All right. Unless there are other fresh hands raised or comments provided, I think we can move on to A8 then, Josh.
Well, okay. So I guess I do want to – maybe we're not sort of clear on this. My point was I think – so ICANN had proposed – they put this item on discussion because they wanted to make sure that the ombudsman issue – or the need to have the ombudsman have the ability to escalate was not something that was going to continue to be pressed. And I think that with the explanation that Chuck said provided, it seems to us that that's not a need that needs to be there. So what Sidley is saying is that we agree with the language as presented, you know, with the slight unrelated change in 8.1A. So if there's no further objection or concern from the CWG community, we'd propose to consider this one closed as well as presented and don't think there's any need for further revision.
Correct, Josh. So that was my understanding as well, and I'm sorry if I didn't convey that effectively.
Chuck has his hand up, though.
Yeah, thanks. This is Chuck. I just want to clarify. Hey, Josh, are you saying that the statement that the ombudsman may request mediation doesn't need to be removed?
No, I don't think there should be a statement that the ombudsman can request mediation.
Okay, good. This is Chuck, and that's all I wanted to clarify because that's what it says now, and I think that needs to be fixed. So I don't think we can just let it ride unless I'm missing something, and try and help me out if I'm getting that wrong.
I think what I'm hearing, Chuck, is you like to have the ombudsman be reflected in phase two in some shape or manner that makes sense. But what Josh is saying is that currently the agreement does not provide for the ombudsman to request mediation as drafted. So I think what Josh was recommending is that based on what you said, Chuck, he does not believe that the ombudsman should be mentioned at all in the agreement. But I think what I'm hearing you say, Chuck, is you think that the ombudsman should be mentioned because it is in the CWG proposal, but mentioned in such a way that it makes sense.
Yes, that's good. Thanks.
Is that correct?
I don't think that's correct.
Thanks, Josh. This is Chuck. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I don't think that's what Chuck said. I think, John, you're creating something that doesn't exist. Right now the language talks about a reference that the complaint initially gets referred to the ombudsman. But the ombudsman does not make an independent decision whether it should be referred further. That's up to the complainant to decide. If the complainant is not satisfied with the resolution reached or not reached with the benefit of the ombudsman's good office, then the complainant can choose to pursue it further. And what I heard Chuck say was that he agrees with that approach, and if that's the case, there doesn't need to be any further change to Section 8.1.
This is Chuck. I think you're saying it accurately. Where we have the problem is our CWG recommendation said that the ombudsman may request mediation, and that I think was put in there. Without careful thought by Design Team M. And so upon further thinking, I don't think we have to worry about that unless somebody thinks we do. I definitely do not think we do. So it was just unfortunate wording in the recommendation from CWG, which came from the team I was leading, so I'll confess to that. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Chuck and Josh, for clarifying that. I see Olivier wanted to come in. So, Olivier, did you have an additional point or question you wanted to ask in respect to this?
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Olivier Capanoblon speaking. My question relates to the IRP. In the current IRP, is the ICANN Ombudsman given the ability to request mediation? Because if we are to write a process here, actually it's an open question. If we are to write a process and we say, well, we're going to take the Ombudsman out of the equation for being able to request mediation, would that clash with any IRP that currently allows for the Ombudsman to do that?
Olivia, this is Tran. I'll attempt to answer your question. Currently, the Ombudsman office does not initiate mediation. So for us to actually provide that right would be a new right that the Ombudsman would have. The Ombudsman consider issues of fairness that are brought to him. And if after consideration he wants to make a recommendation, then he would do so via a report to the ICANN board. So that essentially is the scope of his responsibility currently. The Ombudsman may use mediation as a tool to consider the issues that are brought to him.
It's Olivier speaking. I believe the Ombudsman may also offer mediation on other matters as well, but I was just checking on when it comes down to the IRP. So that's fine. Thanks.
Thanks, Olivier. I think and Chuck confirms in the chat that as far as he's concerned, the Ombudsman doesn't have a role in the RFP. But as to this specific question here under A7, I think we've satisfactorily resolved it and have clarity on the way forward here. So let's give it back to Josh then to move on, if you feel comfortable doing so, Josh.
Yes. So I think we can move on to Section A8, which deals with costs and refers to Section 10.1C of the agreement. There was some language in the agreement, that talked about the general principle that the PTI would not be charging for its services, and any charges or fees levied would have to be approved by, ICANN. That would also be based on actual costs incurred. There was some language in there about the value of the resources utilized, which Paul Kane raised a question about, and others. We understand from ICANN that was intended to address indirect costs, but we believe that can be captured and has been captured in other parts more effectively. And ICANN agreed that it does not need to be stated here. So it's been removed to avoid any confusion. So the language simply says now in 10C that if any 10.1C that if any fees are approved by ICANN and charged, they will be based on actual costs incurred. So there's no objection or request for any further discussion or language change there. We can consider this matter closed as well. Pause for a minute. But no hands raised and nothing in the chat. The next then is A8. And this deals with also with requests for information. And I wonder if I want to turn this one over to you to discuss how, you all have attempted to resolve this in conjunction with Annex C as well.
Sure, Josh. So for A9 requests for information, Sidley had previously suggested some text around this topic, and ICANN rejected the text that was suggested, and then there was a question that was raised by Paul King as to why it was rejected. And I kind of provided a response that, as discussed within the CCWG accountability process, there really is no inherent right to inspection that goes beyond the directors or the member of PTI. And within the CCWG accountability process, there was agreement to give the empowered community the ability to inspect ICANN books and records in specific circumstances. And, you know, the CWG proposal also didn't provide for this right of inspection for PTI or any references to the ICANN-DIPI process. So given the specific and unique operational role of PTI, we felt that the language that was previously proposed around requests for information should just not be dropped in to the contract, you know, but that if there is going to be some text around that, that it should be part of a broader discussion. So how we have instead proposed to address this was through the transparency and the language around the transparency section that commits PTI to operating in a transparent manner and committing PTI to the same standard of transparency that ICANN is bound to via the ICANN bylaws. So that's how we have suggested to address A9.
Yeah, and there was language that Sidley discussed with ICANN here that makes it express that contractor will cooperate with the dispute resolution, IFRT, and related escalation procedures and ICANN's bylaws and contractor's bylaws, and will produce documents and information in accordance with any of those reviews and procedures. So it would keep the intent being that if there is a review, activity or documentation produced by PTI couldn't be shielded from that review because it's a separate entity from ICANN, which contractually draws them in to the same obligations.
So, Josh, is it proposed that, just to clarify, it's Jonathan speaking, that where you've talked, where the Sidley comment says consider as an alternative, what is that alternative being? Assuming there was no further comment from the CWG, would that alternative be put into the document, or where do we stand at present? What are we confirming?
Yeah, so this ICANN has agreed to insert this language in as the alternative. So it is currently in the draft in section 12.3, and if there's no further objection or need to look at some of the earlier language or to try and reinstate the earlier language, the proposal from ICANN would be to consider this matter closed, and with the inclusion of the language that we suggested, Sidley wouldn't have any further objection to closing the matter either.
Okay, so subject to any other comments arriving from the CWG, then in my view that is satisfactory, alternative as presented in the third column. So let's just give a moment to see if anyone else has any concerns, but from my perspective, that seems to be a sensible alternative.
Okay. I think there being no further objection, we can consider this matter closed as well. And Tran, if you could handle the final matter as well, because this was quite a technical issue, and I don't want to misstate anything.
Sure, Josh. And so A10, which is where we are, refers to, I want to say, Section 3 of the SOW, which carry over the DNSSEC provisions that are currently in the IANA functions contract. So we carried that over into the SOW, and that was upon Sidley's review of the initial draft of the contract. Obviously, like as Josh had mentioned, this is all quite technical stuff. There was a note that asked whether or not this should be reviewed by anyone, and I just wanted to I can respond that obviously David Conrad did review and go through the the section and making sure that the way that we had carried over from the IANA functions contract is reflective of the current practices. So that has been done, and I don't know if the CWG wishes to do any additional review of this DNSX section, but that's what has been done.
Jonathan, I don't know if the right people are on this call to weigh in on this, but again, this would be one that if there's no objection or no belief that any further changes or in these baseline requirements need to be made, then I think this matter can be considered closed as well. It was something that Sidley had wanted, had noted specifically because it is a technical matter, and we wanted to make sure the right eyes from the CWG community were focused on this provision.
Difficult to comment, Josh, if, or Paul. Paul, just to acknowledge that you've inadvertently come in late, and you're a substantial contributor to much of this. We've worked our way through A1 to 10. So I don't want to draw us right back through the document, but if there was something, a particular point in the table that you would like clarification on why it's resolved, I think we owe you that courtesy since you've put a lot of work in here. So, I didn't have a specific comment on 810, Josh.
If I may, I, first of all, let me apologize to members of the CWG. I inadvertently had it down at the wrong time. I will do some reading up. I've only just basically brought this document up to look at. So, unfortunately, I don't have any comments. Could you just... because I haven't actually had a chance to read it yet. Are we discussing item 10 now, just so I can catch up? I do apologize.
Paul, yes, we're on right. A10. We've worked our way systematically through items A1 to 10, and the essence
Perfect.
Of most of it is there's been a substantial dialogue between ICANN Legal and Sidley that's resulted in compromised language that's attempted to reflect the various inputs along the way, and for the most part, the issue has been, is the CWG satisfied with the compromise language? And you can see from the record in the right-hand notes, there's been some discussion in on some of the points, but for the most part, there has been no objection from the CWG to the final compromise language that's been reached. So that's where we are.
Okay, thank you. I apologize again to all members. I'll try and come to speed. Just My main or my overarching concern is for those CCTLDs, or for the CCTLD community in general, of course, that's the party I'm representing, but for those CCTLDs who are not part of the ICANN framework to really respect the ICANN bylaw that ensures that they are not inherently bound by ICANN policy, however it is derived or created, unless they explicitly can give explicit consent to it. But again, I apologize. I will read the comments, but I do wish to reserve that opinion and comment even on 1 to 10. But now I'm joining you. I'll try and keep up. Apologies again.
Thanks, Paul. There was quite substantial discussion on the list on item 4.7, and that was probably the one we spent the most time on, which is covered under section A3 of this document. And so that's really probably most relevant to your point. And there was some revised wording proposed, which we've essentially settled on. And I think there's... I'm not sure whether the CC participants on list and on the call are necessarily members of the CCNSO or not, but there's been quite some substantial input from CC participants. And to Chuck's point in the chat, we are at a late stage now. I mean, this essentially summarizes it, and for the most part, I mean, we've gone through each of these, and essentially consider them closed. So it is important, if there are any outstanding concerns, that they get expressed quickly and pragmatically with a view to dealing with them, because in essence, we've dealt with most of these. Josh, let me hand back to you.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. I think we can also add to the sort of closed list that A10, there haven't been any objections raised, and that can be considered closed as well. And then I just wanted to say, just Paul, for your benefit, you might also, when you're looking at the chart, it may be helpful to look at the actual red line that we had circulated as well to the client committee when we sent the chart that has some of the proposed language changes inserted in context. You might be able easier to see how some of that plays out if you look at that alongside your review. We use that alongside in our discussion. So, Jonathan, I turn it back to you at this point. I don't think there's anything else to talk about on the naming functions agreement. I do agree, because there have been some minor changes that were done, so there's even more red line than was specifically put into this discussion. So I agree that the simplest way and the most efficient way to present it to the community might be, once we do get sign-off, for CWG to attach the redline version to its comment letter rather than walk through each of the items.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate your input on that process as well. So just to highlight this point of process, then, we will have a further meeting, the final meeting we can have before the close of public comment 1 week from today. So in essence, we will be essentially signing off. Assuming we go down this route of process, and it seems to me to be the most logical way, we present the latest version of the red line document and submit that as effectively our CWG comment to the public comment on this document. And we will do that in the day following our next call, which is 1 week from now. So really what we'll be doing is effectively signing off on that red line at the next call. So if anyone's concerned about deadlines and timing, that's what it amounts to. And the document is sort of firming up as we speak, really. If there are any other comments on that process, let us know. But failing that, I expect we'll see a further red line which incorporates these changes as discussed in this meeting today, and that will be getting close to the final version that we'll be submitting for public comment during the public comment process. All right, so that deals with the naming functions agreement, and we should publish that revised version as soon as possible to the list, incorporating any changes that have been agreed on this call. As far as the services agreement, you heard earlier that's a work in progress, although it's imminent, so we'll come to that review of that at the next meeting. And we can now move on to the IANA IPR point. At last week's call, which I missed, it was agreed to proceed with ICANN as signatory, and it was agreed that Sidley would provide a form of letter to communicate that to ICANN. But what is missing from that is a definition of the naming community, and there's been some discussion of that, which seems to be developing fairly well over the last, most recent past. I wonder if I could ask to perhaps summarize where we are on that. So if we could see up, I guess it would be useful to see the letter. Josh, maybe you'd like to make a few comments on that letter so we can agree the form of that letter and then come on to the detailed points on the definition of a names community and the CCG reps, which, Greg, I'll just prime you. You may want to initiate the conversation there or lead, summarize where we seem to be from our discussion on list, because there's been some good input there, and it feels to me like we are reasonably far down the track. So Josh, perhaps you could speak to the letter in the draft letter in the first instance.
Sure, happy to do so, Jonathan. And if ICANN could allow people independent scrolling on the letter, that would be helpful too. As discussed last week, we did put together a letter of instruction. We thought that it would be appropriate for this letter of instruction to come from the CC or the CWG, the Cross Community Working Group, and be signed by the co-chairs of the group. It does reflect the consensus reached by this group, and although it is not, you know, a formal legal entity, I think there's, you know, pretty strong, we feel there's pretty strong sort of moral persuasion and persuasive power in having this instruction come from the CWG and have it be agreed to and signed and agreed to by ICANN. So assuming that ICANN agrees with all of these instructions, and we have not yet gotten any feedback, they haven't reviewed this in any way, I think they were waiting to see that CWG was satisfied with the form and content of the letter, and then they'll undertake a review as well. But assuming that to be the case, then ICANN would enter into the agreement as well. This letter would acknowledge and accept to be bound by this letter instruction. This does follow the scenario one that was discussed previously, still leaves open the opportunity, if decided down the road after implementation, to form a legal entity to represent the names community. But if not, then ICANN would hopefully continue to act under the confines of this letter. The letter itself, I don't need to go into all the detail. It basically says that ICANN will, you know, take on this role, that it will appoint the CCG representatives to the community agreement that are identified by the names community. And to avoid any confusion, we've left a space to actually identify the initial three. It also states that ICANN won't remove or replace any of the CCG representatives or the co-chair without, you know, the approval or instruction of the names community. It further states, to be clear, that those CCG representatives are going to handle a lot of the day-to-day function of interacting with and representing the names community with respect to the IETF trusts under the community agreement. In paragraph 3, ICANN would specifically state that it won't interfere with or override any decisions by the CCG representatives or CCG co-chair that are reserved or set forth as responsibility of those CCG representatives in the community agreement. There is also the paragraph 4 dealt with the IETF trust agreeing to seek an amendment to their governing documents after implementation, but they wanted this to be something that they would do after a formal request was received from the various communities. Section 4 deals with that, just giving ICANN the instruction to respond and respect that decision or that request to be passed on from the names community. Section 5 is probably the more important, one of the more important instructions with respect to this letter that comes from the names community. And in this section, we're specifically stating, the community specifically instructing ICANN that it shouldn't act without instruction from the names community on certain items. And there are three items here in particular. One is to replace the IANA services operator if the community determines that needs to happen. And that sort of ties in both A and B together. And then also any decision by the names community to withdraw from the community agreement if, for whatever reason, the names community felt it should not be a member or be a participant or signatory to the community agreement going forward, but that ICANN wouldn't withdraw without, you know, instruction from the names community. The final thing is sort of a catch-all, and to the extent that there isn't a specific decision or power reserved to the names community or reserved to the CCG representatives, but the operational community or the signatory to the community agreement, in this case ICANN, is called upon to provide some consultation or advice. You could imagine this coming up in connection perhaps with The trust identifies a third party that's infringing on the intellectual property and wants some consultation. And in the community agreement is supposed to consult with the names community prior to initiating any action against that third party infringer. In this case, that consultation would be with, through ICANN, and ICANN would consult with the names community and would, similar to what process we adopted with respect to the trust in the community agreement and with respect to the GAC advice, there'd be a rebuttable presumption that advice and counsel provided by the names community would be followed by ICANN in this manner. And if there weren't, there'd be some process for the two to come together and try to reach consensus on that decision. So that's basically the letter of instruction. And the gaps that still remain, as we pointed out in the beginning, are, how do we accurately or adequately describe the names community and who shall serve as the initial CCG representatives? As Jonathan said, I believe Greg has been working on that with some others. And so I'll either turn this back over to you, Jonathan, or can turn the mic directly over to Greg at this point.
Thanks, Josh. It's Jonathan. I'll briefly take the mic. And I guess we should just ask if there are any questions or comments on the letter before we go to those, other than those open items that we flag. Okay, seeing none, let me hand over to Greg then to try and, Greg, if you could try and capture where you think we've got to on these, and rather than going back to first principles, it might be useful because there's been some, as I say, quite substantial discussion on list, and it feels like we've moved things along, and perhaps you could try and summarize that and see if that gives us either a further jumping off point or indeed close to some form of agreed position we can work with.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yes, I think we've been round the way a bit. This is Greg Chatton for the record, and no reason to discuss the journey, but to thank those who participated in the thread. I think in the end, we're probably overthinking things in terms of trying to come up with some sort of brand new metaphysical definition of the names community. We've been acting, the CWG has been acting in the interest of the names community all along, and has done things far more significant than appoint people to a fairly minor oversight board, minor but critical, of course, but which will largely convey oversight that's already taking place in areas like the CSC and the like. Given that, we did retreated, I think, from ideas of trying to define the plenum or totality of the names community of the global world, and really went back to the issue of what organizations or instrumentalities can act for the names community to in turn instruct ICANN, as was just discussed by Josh in a letter, and to appoint the CCG representatives, the community coordination group representatives that will come from the names community. And I think after discarding some of the more far-ranging alternatives, the idea would be to take some group that probably represents essentially, not represents, but that is drawn from the chartering organizations of the CWG, which could be the CWG itself. It could be some other methodology by which they would all act in concert, or it could be an implementation oversight team, which is acting in that regard. Or it could be even the CSC itself, because a lot of this has to do with essentially quality control and really quality of the services being rendered, because that is one of that's half of the job, is basically assisting the trademark owner, the IETF trust, with overseeing the quality of the goods and services offered under the mark the IETF Trust will own, since we already have mechanisms and all three communities have mechanisms to keep an eye on the service provider. There's no reason to create a separate monitoring function within the IETF Trust, and, you know, nor would they want to expend resources unnecessarily to do so. So the other half of it is kind of keeping an eye on and working with the IETF Trust as the brand owner, but brand owner really on behalf of or a steward for all of the communities. So as a result, it, you know, the best thing seems to be is to stick pretty close to our existing work and our existing structures. It would probably require some change to the CSC, or the CSC could report to some other body or to really directly to the CCG representatives once they're up and running. Any quality control issues that, you know, would then be reported to the brand owner, and then we have the other listed things that CCG representatives need to be told to do by the NAMES community or those acting in the interest of the NAMES community. And then similarly, you know, we see in the letter in front of us what ICANN, as the signatory, would need to be told to do, and, you know, could be told by the CCG. But in turn, it comes down to who appoints the CCG and who does one turn to if you're the CCG or ICANN and you have to do something and you're acting on behalf of the NAMES community. So I saw Jonathan's hand slit up. Just to take it back then, I think we're looking at some organization, the CWG, or something made up from the chartering organization, such as an implementation team, or, you know, conceivably the CSC, but I don't want to overburden them with kind of oversight of the IETF Trust and plus the skill set, maybe a tiny bit different and kind of overlooking a brand owner on top of, you know, overlooking an IANA operator. So there you have it. Thanks.
So, Greg, as you were speaking, I was sort of processing that and trying to figure out what to do. And when I look at the blank in the letter, the first thing the letter says, the letter agreement confirms the request of the community working group on behalf of the WHO. And it, to me, to my mind, it's the members of the CWG. I mean, that's the, if we accept that the CWG has done all of this work on as a representative of the NAMES community, it's on behalf of the members, because the members were chosen to make up and comprise the CWG. So to my mind, that first hurdle seems relatively straightforward. It becomes slightly more, perhaps there's another challenge in terms of dealing with the initial CCG representatives, or but perhaps what we need to do is look at, I mean, the challenge, I guess, is that the members of the CWG could, or a successor CWG could change from time to time, in the possible there could be other component groups making up the membership, but I'm not sure we can account for that right now. So it seems to me that the members make quite some sense. I would love to hear from some others.
Jonathan, Cheryl here. I just want to support that. I think that makes perfect sense.
Thanks, Cheryl. And I understand you can't put your hand up, so that's useful to have your intervention there. And there's a note from Matthew Shears agreeing with that suggestion in the chat as well.
Jonathan, question. When you mean the members, do you mean the individual humans, or are you referring to the chartering organizations that put those members there, or some?
To be clear, I mean the member organizations, the on behalf of the member chartering organizations, or the chartering organizations appointing members.
Thank you. I support that as well. We're back to kind of if when the CWG or evaporates, which eventually it will, who succeeds that role? I think as long as we exist in this body, we can probably select the initial CCG just as we selected the initial CSC or worked to coordinate that, and can instruct any initial instructions. But we could have we need to have a successor. Now, of course, we could kick the can down the road and suggest that the CWG will appoint a successor in the role of, you know, named community organization at the time that it itself subsides. So we don't have to do it now.
I guess I would suggest something, a sort of subtle variation on that. I mean, right now it's the chartering organizations. I think to the extent that there is a role to be played, and I admit it's getting a little late for me now, but if there was a role to be played by a successor organization, we could require that successor organization IO implementation oversight task force or otherwise was comprised member representatives from the chartering organizations. So you could have an ad hoc group with member representatives in the same proportions as the CWG or something along those lines. So it essentially created a similarly representative body to deal with whatever else was needed to be dealt with in the future. Does that make any sense? Would that be of value? Greg notes in the chat that would be fine with him, a sort of echo of the CWG. Avery, go ahead. Your hand is raised.
Yeah, thank you. This is Avery speaking. So I guess one of the things, I mean, I have no problem that we're creating yet another bit of complexity. And I guess one of the reasons, and perhaps I'm just misunderstanding what's going on, but one of the reasons we're not using the EC contract, a construct, for it is because that doesn't yet exist. But at some point, that will exist when the CWG ceases to exist. Largely, the chartering organizations for CWG exist in that. I don't remember whether it's an exact one-to-one mapping, but it's pretty close. So I guess I don't quite understand why we get into extra complexity. And it isn't the CWG doing it now and passing it to the EC once the EC is an existing thing. Thanks,
Avery. Personally, I have to admit I'm not sufficiently clear on the scope and definition of the EC to comment on that. I see a check mark from Alan. If anyone would like to speak to that, it would be helpful. If this baton could be successfully passed to the EC, that may make sense. And I see a hand up from Alan, followed by one from Josh. So let's hear from Alan first.
I also, the exact composition doesn't matter. It's an authoritative body that we could give a task to, even though it's not in the bylaws. So I would support that.
Just to be very specific, Alan, that being the point that Avery raised, the use of the EC.
That's correct.
Thanks, Alan. Josh, go ahead.
So I haven't been as close to the final sort of organization of the EC, but my understanding is that it doesn't exist as a standing body, but it springs into existence if there is a IFRT review or some sort of a dispute procedure, an escalation process, and a result is reached. And that result is called into question in some way, or that the EC may choose to reject that result, you know, focused mostly on sort of ICANN's performance of its duties or their end services. And so while I agree, it probably could fill a substantial portion of this role because things like transitioning away from the names from PTI as the INS services provider would not happen without the involvement of the EC. There are lots of sort of more minor or less substantive, not lots, but there are less minor and less substantive requests or consultation that are made with the NAMES community through the community agreement. And I don't know if the EC is sort of going to be in a position to adequately come together and weigh in on those things on an as-needed basis, or if it would be better to have something that was a little bit more fluid, like what's been discussed with having the representative bodies of the stakeholder communities that are the members of the CWG.
An interesting point, and I see a couple of hands raised. So let's think this through most carefully, because you've got here that at the moment as we stand, we've got the letter agreement confirms the request of the community working group on behalf of the chartering organizations of the CWG. Those are my words, in brackets, the NAMES community that I can serve as signatory. It's felt that we could nominate the initial CCG reps from within the CWG. Is what I'm understanding the working proposal to be. The question is, what happens when and if at some future point we need to elect new or remove or replace CCG representatives? Now, I must say, having heard things, I'm tempted to leave it open and just say that the NAMES community will come together in the way we have with the CWG, and it may be with another CWG for that specific purpose, or an implementation oversight task force, as Chuck has said, or indeed the alternative is that we ask the empowered community mechanism to deal with it at that point. But perhaps we don't need to actually specify it. What are your thoughts, Alan? Or Avery, did you put your hand down anticipating speaking? Because if you did, let's hear from you first, Avery.
No, I put my hand down because I saw that Alan was going to say very much what I had thought to say about the empowered community having far more to do than just handling the IFRT and such. And it is one of the mechanisms by which the community members will act together. So that's why I was thinking it was a convenient mechanism. But if the lawyers tell me that it is not adequate, that I guess I'll remain confused. Thanks.
May I go ahead, Jonathan?
Please do, Alan.
Okay. The concept of bringing together a mini CWG to appoint a person is mind-boggling. The amount of effort that goes into selecting people for something like the CWG or even a mini version of it is just overkill by an order of magnitude. I would have no problem saying the board selects the person. With the EC can always overpower the board should they pick such a wrong person. But I just think this is naming of a person, and I don't think it's a substantive issue. So I would just, give the responsibility to the board. If we really believe the community must weigh in on naming this person, then the EC, I think, is a viable place to do that. Yes, it is not the kind of thing the EC normally does. Let them set up some rules. But the concept of bringing together a new group to name a person, which may have to be done sporadically and may have to be on a very short notice at any given time, I think is just overkill. Thank you.
So, Alan, Greg's, that's a good point. And Greg's put said we could take a further look at the EC, but also have the CWG Act in this regard for so long as it exists. And again, I put the question to you and others, do we need to nominate the body, whether it's the board, the empowered community, CWG, or can we not simply trust that the NAMES community could make these selections in any event? Greg, go ahead.
Greg Shatton again. I think, sir, I don't believe the board would be the right place to select people. Plus, it's not just the selection, it's who these representatives go back to determine how to act when they don't feel that they're, kind of entirely within their own self able to take the actions they need, and also who instructs on some of these things. So I don't think that's right. I will kind of entertain again perhaps the idea of the customer standing committee, including its liaisons, although perhaps not the PTI liaison. Not quite sure. It's not perfect either, but it may be too small and too focused on operational things. But half of the things that the CCG or ICANN will act on will be coming from either the CSC or from IFRs. So it's at least half right as a possible place. Perhaps another kludge, and again, we don't necessarily need to do any of this before the transition as long as the CWG exists, but another kludge could be to say that we will take, call upon an organization in the form of the empowered community, but not the empowered community, which I guess an echo of the empowered community, in a sense, or somewhere along those lines. There needs to be, some sort of panel that needs to, deal with the CCG people and the like, and the decisions that need to be taken in oversight of both the IETF Trust and of ICANN as well. Thanks.
Greg, I hear your proposal, current proposal. I'd quite like to understand what the deadline we're working towards here as well. What is our time frame for sorting this out? Because my understanding is that this is a relatively urgent time frame. So I've got currently that we requested the community working group on behalf of the chartering organizations. We've got the CWG selecting the initial representatives, possibly. And your suggestion there or proposal was consider the Customer Standing Committee as the future selector or replacer of such representatives. Alan?
Yeah, thank you. The CSC is controlled by the registries, and I would object strenuously to say they are, the CCs and the G registries are the NAMES community. That is just a mangling of what the NAMES community is, so that I would strongly object to. I'm not sure why Greg says the board would be the wrong place. The board is the group representing ICANN, which embodies the NAMES community, and indeed the empowered community has oversight over the board. So it sounds like we're taking a simple answer and making it into a complex thing, and I'm not quite sure why.
But Alan, isn't the board going to simply come back to the NAMES community, that is the chartering organizations, and say, tell us who you want?
It may well. Or if someone dies and we have to name someone immediately, they could simply do it, at least on an interim basis.
And just for the record, there's a few notes, not only your comment, Alan, but Donna and others have pointed out that the suggestion of the CSC goes well beyond the charter of the CSC. So that doesn't seem to be garnering much support at the moment. Josh, you raised your hand. Let's hear from you if you can help us out of this or move us along. Josh, no audio from you yet.
This is Josh. It's an interesting idea, Alan, having the board take on this responsibility for the NAMES community, but it does seem to create some circularity there because ICANN is supposed to
is not supposed to take certain action without instruction from the NAMES community. And if that action is coming from instruction of the board, then who's the board acting for in that scenario? Is it acting for the NAMES community, or is it acting for its duty as its fiduciary duty to ICANN with a duty of loyalty and the like? I wonder if that kind of that approach would create some confusion as to, you know, what hat the board members should be wearing when they're making decisions, and would not perhaps unnecessarily complicate things when trying to decide what should be done, and also thinking about the consequences of what that may look like with respect to sort of the checks and balances for how ICANN is supposed to be acting in this capacity as signatory. Seems to me there are, that it might be better to have a little bit of distance between ICANN as signatory and the direction given by the NAMES community, whether that comes from CWG initially and then the EC, if people believe it's adequate to deal with it, then that may be appropriate or something else.
Well, thanks for that, Josh. I would like to ask a question before going to the next person, which is Greg. Could we deal with this? I don't want to just avoid the problem, but I think we need a solution at the moment which gives us a representative of the NAMES community and gives us an opportunity to appoint the initial CCG reps. Could we just deal with that and then deal with future representation of the NAMES community after having settled that? So that's what I posed to the group, whether we need to resolve this completely now. I see some suggestions in the chat, you know, along the lines of the chairs of each SOAC or at least the chartering organizations. Greg, your hand's raised.
A suggestion I made in the chat, and maybe kind of refining, is maybe just call on the chairs of the chartering organizations to be available for consultation to the CCG members and to confer among themselves to and as necessary with their organization to come up with replacements as necessary. That way we don't have to have really, it's not really a standing body, but the chairs always exist, and it's a small enough group that could be done. And I think they're kind of, you know, temperamentally suited to that sort of semi ad hoc role, and we just let if you just use the chairs of the chartering organizations and don't bring in the stakeholder groups and constituencies, it's a very small group. It's what, 5 people. They should be able to among themselves do something rational, and that's, I think, a better kind of representation of the NAMES community than the ICANN board, especially given that ICANN is already sitting in kind of at least 2 other places in this setup, being the signatory and also being kind of the object at the bottom of the project. So it's an easy and identifiable group that doesn't have to exist or worry too much about how many of who is being represented. Thanks.
And up. Well, that seems to be gathering a little traction. Was that you, Cheryl, wanting to come in there?
Yes, it was. Thanks. If I'm next in queue.
Please go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Cheryl Langton, off the record. And thanks for that, Greg. I certainly wasn't comforted by the concept of board. I supported the concept at the very beginning of the chartering organisations, and I think the chartering organisations as represented the chartering organisations represented by their chairs is only a small drift from that and a refining point that I'm happy to go along with. I think it needs to be the chartering organisations, whether that's an embodiment in a full-blown sense of the EC, or whether it's the more agile, and I think should be more agile, system of the chairs. My preference is for the latter rather than the former, but right now I think we just need to stick with the chartering organisation.
Thanks, Cheryl. And Greg's suggestion seems to have got a bit of traction from others in the chat as well, notably Avery and Matthew, if I understand correctly. So it feels to me like we may have some direction here, which essentially works with on behalf of the chartering organisations, which are currently represented in this work by the CWG, whether or not we need to specify, and we need to find a way of specifying all their chairs as appropriate, COs by their chairs. That's great to put in the chat. It's getting a little late, both in time and in terms of the duration of the call. I wonder if that's, Josh, do you think that's enough for you to start to work up another version of this then? Have you got enough to work with if you've got the chartering organizations potentially represented by their chairs in future and the CWG at present?
Yeah, I think we can work up some language and we could share it with Greg or others sort of with the list offline just to make sure we get it, you know, right, and bring it back for the next week's meeting. That's fine. Jonathan, though, I guess the next question is to you, and what do you want to do about the three CCG representatives?
I think it feels like we need to find a way of selecting those from within the group. We need to nominate those within the group. What I'm not clear on, Josh, and maybe you can help me here, is what's our deadline here? I've slightly lost track of the deadline when this is required by.
I'm pulling up the document again right now. There had been some discussion earlier about having those persons be identified at the time the agreement was entered into, but that may have come out.
And is that time the 30th of September or sooner?
I'm looking.
Okay, thanks. Greg, do you happen to recall that timing?
I do believe that while we took the names out of the agreement, the idea is still that they would be, the CCG would exist at the time that everything fell into place. So they should be on, you know, by September 30th, that they should be selected.
Yeah, so that's consistent with my understanding then. Exactly. So
yes.
Sullivan highlights that in the chat as well.
Yeah, there's nothing that says they are no longer attached by name, but I agree with Greg's comment that I think the intent is that this group be able to be up and running as soon as the time the agreement's entered into.
All right. So the outcome of the discussion we've had is that essentially we want the chartering organizations, as currently represented by the CWG and potentially as represented by their chairs in future, to be responsible for dealing with these appointments. And what we need to do now as a CWG is identify those initial appointees. And so that's a task and an action for the CWG that we're clearly not going to get into now. I'll obviously talk with Lisa about that, and we'll all talk together about what that process might be. But we're clearly going to have to work pretty fast on that so that we don't run right up to the September 30th deadline. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. That was a constructive effort to get to that point. As far as I can tell, that deals with the substance of what we need to do on this call today. So I think it brings us to the AOB point of the call, unless I've missed something, which I don't believe I have. So is there any other business, or have I not covered everything? Is there anything else that anyone would like to raise at this point? In terms of the schedule we're running for calls, our next call will be on the 8th, today being the first 1 week from today, and it will take place at, I think our time is 1400 UTC for the next call. Double check that in my own diary to make sure I'm not misleading anyone. Yeah, 1400 UTC, Thursday, 8th of September.
Has an invite gone out for that? I'm not sure I've seen it.
Let's just make sure that I certainly have one, but Josh, I'm not sure how generally that's gone out. So if we could just make a note, Natalie, to make sure that Sidley is invited to that next call, that would be great. All right. I think that deals with the substance of what we need today. Thanks very much, everyone. There were some reasonably substantial issues to get through there, and we've done so in the time allocated and in the right approach. So thank you very much. Thanks to all the contributors. In a week.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, everybody. Bye.